This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, welcome to the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show. Yes, we're almost on time tonight. It's only 2 minutes past seven. For us, that's pretty good. Now, we've got a very, 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 very packed show tonight. Not least because we've got some cracking games to discuss. But also, we have a very special guest tonight. In fact, we have two very special guests. But before all of that, I have with me His Royal Highness, the Duke of Jonathan Kidd.
I am charmed to be described that way. Thank you so much.
How are you, dear? You well?
Earl Chidge. Earl Chidge of Chidgery. Yes. I'm very well, thanks very much.
Good week.
And I've done an audition for some singing thing that I didn't get, which has depressed me incredibly, as Ooh. You'd expect, as that happens. But no, other than that, our team won, which has left me in complete joy.
We lost, but we won.
Yeah, but all right. Yeah, but we won the two-legged thing. But, you know, as we'll get onto it, depressed by the media reaction to this terrible usurping team. How dare they? They don't deserve to be anywhere.
Well, we will fight back tonight, JK, be of no doubt. Now, we've also got, as always, there's three of us on the Friday night preview show. And I'm delighted to say we've got the wonderful Mr. Mark Meehan tonight. Describe your T-shirt for those of us of a certain age.
Oh, wonderful.
I've got my Alan Mays T-shirt on tonight, so your da has
stand
seen
up,
Alan
stand
Mays
up, Mark,
before.
So we can see it. Stand up, go
oh, stand
on.
Up. There
oh,
you go.
My goodness me, that is so wonderful. I love it.
There you go.
That is
I know I've had a really good week this week. You know, our football club, you know, has had a very good week for us Chelsea fans. You know, beating crippled Alice, and then obviously the important sort of two-legged victory at home. The other night, and I actually got the programme through this morning, so I've got some reading for the weekend, and it does seem really strange seeing a Chelsea programme with the Estadio Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan on the front cover.
I fear it may become a collector's item.
Yeah.
Or hopefully it will be a one-off, you know, certainly from a Chelsea pitch owner's point of view. You know,
Well,
I want it becoming a regular theme.
I have to say, I thought that Alan Mays T-shirt would be a collector's item and a one-off when Philip gave me one, and now I find he's doing them for everybody. I mean, you know...
Yes, you did say on the show that it was been made especially.
I know. I don't know whether to feel complimented or insulted, but anyway.
I would say feel complimented, Chidge, because to be fair, you know, I've said on the show several times, you know, in my best sort of like, you know, I want one, you know, impersonation. So I think Philip must have heard that and he did contact me and said, would you like one, Mark? So I said, yes, please.
Mark, always good to see you on the show. Now, I think we have got a very special guest on the show tonight. We've known this fantastic bloke for a long, 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 long time. It always tickles me pink that I hear his dulcet tones usually on the sports bar closely followed by me. So I feel like I've been sitting on his coattails for many, many a year, and we've planned to have him on the show years and years ago. We're both so bloody useless at organising it, we've never quite managed it until tonight. And I'm really excited to say we've got Simon Johnson from The Athletic on with us tonight. Simon, it really is great to see you, mate. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. I mean, I know that the more youthful looking and his conversation is more articulate than me, my colleague Liam Toomey is a regular on the show and he's taken the night off. And I'm like the sort of the aging sort of striker that's sort of come on to sort of see out a game.
Well, as Tommy Tuchel, as Tommy Tuchel would say, you can't beat a bit of experience. Simon.
That's it.
You're so doing a top-down. I think you'd come on with at least 25 minutes to go.
You know, that seems a lot of time, Jonathan, to be honest, for me.
Brilliant. Listen, as you know, as is customary on the Friday night show, we lob the first kind of bit of discussion your way, Simon, and we want to obviously spend most of this part really just talking about the Porto match on Tuesday night. I mean, my feeling was it was I love to see it, actually. Real professional team performance, got the job done. I love the way they all played for each other, actually. They were running around all night, tackling for each other. I've been saying for a while, there's something about this current Chelsea side under Tuchel that is reminding us of the great sides that we used to see that, apart from everything else, were bloody-minded and stubborn and didn't like to lose. And it's good to see, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. They're well organised. They're very tough to beat. And to be honest with you, I just thought Porto, their main tactic seemed to be, let's stop Chelsea. And that was it. And, I mean, it did work. Chelsea, from an attacking point of view, even by their sort of standards, they struggled going forward. But they didn't string as many sort of flowing moves together as we've seen in recent months. But it didn't matter, because even though Porto pressed very well, once they did win the ball back, they had nothing to offer in the final third themselves, because they were so obsessed with winning the ball back. They had no one sort of further forward to do anything with it. So I thought it was a very sort of comfortable evening, really. I didn't think Chelsea sort of got out of first gear. I'm going to have to constantly remind myself that Chelsea lost. It's the kind of silly mistake that I'll make in my copy, because I'll think, oh, Chelsea only lost once under Tuchel. And then I have to be reminded, oh no, there was that sort of bicycle kick out of nowhere in top corner. It was so in keeping with Porto's performance.
Maybe we can channel our inner Mourinho and go, second legs when you're 2-0 up do not count.
Yeah, exactly. So happy days, as far as I'm concerned. It was very much, and I tweeted during the game, I think, that it reminded me very much of the Benfica game back in 2012. I was very kind of, I'm not saying it's a repeat, I don't want to lay the jinx on, but I was just like, this Chelsea didn't get through against Benfica in great blaze of glory, but it didn't matter, they're through, and that's all that matters.
I've got to say, Simon, I'm really glad you said that, because I'm now feeling, I'm actually feeling quite distraught, because I've just written a piece for Football London, which is alluding to every single coincidence between this season and 2012 that I could find. So, everybody, if it doesn't happen, it's clearly all my fault.
I hope you put an asterisk, sort of.
Yes, I should. The opinions of the author only. This has nothing to do with Football London, I should have put, but there you go. But it was, wasn't it? I mean, Simon alluded to it, JK. You know, Porto, what on earth were they on? I mean, Pulisic got fouled, I think, 11 times, didn't he?
That highlighted the completely inept refereeing. I mean, at least what's his face? Our best referee, is it? What's his name? Oliver.
Michael Oliver.
Michael Oliver. At least he, once upon a time, I remember, gave Herrera a yellow card, which had him sent off for United against us, because Hazard was being serially fouled. But that seemed to be the only time anybody's ever done it. And you know, I always think they need to take a leaf out of rugby's book, in there where the referee says, well, actually you've been fouling quite a lot, so the next person who fouls goes in the book. But they don't seem ever to pay any attention to that. So the very fact that you can then have Pulisic fouled exactly the same number of times as Messi, for goodness sake, with setting a record, you just think, surely the referee's gonna actually give some more yellow cards. We didn't do anything about it, he just carried on playing. And I mean, good luck to Pulisic, who I thought was our most dangerous attacker as a consequence. And I think is coming into his own at the moment. I'm really looking forward to what he can actually get away with. Well, if he isn't fouled at the weekend, he seems to be getting back to the form he had before he tore his hamstring in the cup final. And to me, he's looking like the best attacker. But they seemed so intent chopping him down all the time. As you were saying, Simon, they seem to be absolutely trying to stop Chelsea from playing rather than thinking we've got to score two goals. It was absolutely bizarre. But unfortunately, the really professional thing that we did, which is to stop them, which is to just not have them getting anywhere near the penalty area, has been held against us as being an example of what a completely toothless side we are. And but I always think the people who've held it against us are all Liverpool and Man United fans in the media who wanted, of course, Liverpool to play Chelsea in the semi-final. And then Liverpool would put us to the sword gloriously. And that would be, and they'd advance into the final and then beat whoever they played against. Because that's what the best team in the world is supposedly supposed
BT
to do.
BT Sport would have been effervescent, wouldn't
it? Completely. Well, not even BT Sport. Oh, yes, absolutely BT Sport, because it couldn't have been Sky Sports because they don't ever have the European anymore. But yeah, so I'm perturbed that this professional display has been turned into this this kind of no, they're not very good.
Let's ask Simon about this, because I know where you're coming from. I mean, you know, I know that. Well, I mean, you get upset by this. I wear it as a badge of honour. I like nothing more than Chelsea to be. I like nothing more than Chelsea to be a shithouse team that winds everybody up and pisses them off. And but that's the supporter coming out. What's it like being in the media, Simon? Because I mean, I'm not saying there's a gender and bias, but there's a lot of love for teams like Liverpool, and Chelsea do tend to get a bit of stick, don't they?
Absolutely. I don't remember, you know, if Chelsea had been praised, it's sort of been almost begrudging.
Yes. Damned with faint praise.
But you sort of, you know, it's not sort of damning everyone in the industry, but I think there's an element of the sort of hooligan reputation among the fan base. Then there's the Ken Bates era and some of the stuff that he got up to. And of course, he obviously didn't entertain the press, or he certainly was quite vocal against the press at times. Then you've got sort of new money, you know, that sort of lazy sort of thing that Chelsea are the only team in the history of football to spend money to buy players. Yes, they've spent a lot, but, you know, so have a lot of successful clubs. Then you've got Jose Mourinho and all the antics. So I just think there's... And there's been a few antics, let's be fair, that Chelsea players have done.
Yeah.
You know, Costa. But sort of, you know, Ashley Cole with air rifles, John Terry and his various sort of misdemeanors, etc. Which sort of adds fuel to the fire of this script of, oh, Chelsea, you know, sort of they're not a classy club, etc. But it's all nonsense, I think.
Yeah.
I think for years, even when Chelsea won trophies, it's like I said, it's been kind of praised, but through gritted teeth from some people.
That's a really interesting perspective on that. So thank you, Simon. I mean, it is interesting what Simon says there, Mark, but back to the football. Couple of things, really. I mean, you know, again, Simon and JK both alluded to Pulisic, actually. I thought it was really important for Pulisic that match. I think it was a real kind of, you know, Rubicon crossed match, if you like, because he physically put himself on the line. And we've had doubts about not only his physicality, but his ability to withstand injury. It was almost Hazard-esque in the way that he allowed himself to be kicked all match and was such a great outball for us, I thought. So I think he deserves a huge amount of praise. But I tell you what, you know, Jorginho, bit of a Marmite player, who I've often had a go at because, you know, when he deserves it, I will. But I thought he rose to the occasion, Mark.
He's hated him, Jorginho.
I
don't hate anybody, JK.
You hated Jorginho.
I just liked him less than the others.
I want him out, he said. I want him out.
Mate, I didn't call him. I didn't drop the C-bomb on him the other week like you did, mate.
That's true, I did.
So actually, let's have it right. All right.
He did play very badly against West Bromwich, let's be frank.
Yes, all right. Anyway, Mark, bring some sense to the lunacy.
Absolutely. And I can assure people in Mixlr that, you know, Chidge and I haven't compared scripts beforehand. And I had two things done for tonight. I'd written down Hazard-esque because I think, as I said, we're joined at the hip here. And also, I'll come to Jorginho in a minute. But several times on the show in recent weeks, like, I've expressed concern about Pulisic and real concern you know, that he wasn't the same player. And, you know, is it that concern about the injuries had previously? I thought he was magnificent the other night, and it was a Hazard-esque performance. He was the go-to person. And again, it wasn't just the record-breaking 11 fouls, you know, on him. You know, if you look at the 55% of the fouls during the game, there's only 11 they were pulled up for, but 55%. Yeah, but also if you made up the video of all the tackles and fouls on him the other night, it adds up to 5 minutes of 90 minutes play.
Wow.
He really absorbed so much of the pressure for us the other night. And I thought he was absolutely magnificent. And I think, you know, I know we'll talk later about the likely team. He has to play tomorrow. Mm. You know, he really is the outlet. And, you know, if that's him coming into the latter part of the season when it really matters and he carries that form in, that's something to look forward to. In terms of Jorginho, I'm like yourself. You know, I've been critical of him. But what I've always said, the type of player Jorginho is, there's certain games that actually suits him. And I thought it suited him the other night. And I was actually looking at Football 365 today, because a friend of mine, Danny Ford, who I've mentioned on the show before, sent it to me by WhatsApp. And there's a really good article in there. And I urge people to go and look at it, where he says, you know, Jorginho is now non-negotiable, you know, in terms of he has to be in the team. Yeah, and it's an honest article. They actually say about Jorginho, he is a limited footballer. You know, he's not N'Golo Kante, where, you know, from a media point of view, there is a lot of love for. They basically say Jorginho is slow. He's not hugely creative. Yeah, you know, and actually says he doesn't shoot unless it's from the penalty spot. But he's very, 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 very slow, and he is. Yeah, you know, but at the same point, they say the role he plays the other night, you know. And it wasn't necessarily picked up when BT are having their love in about Kante, but actually he did more than anybody the other night. You know, he completed more tackles. Yeah, he did more interceptions. You know, and you know, he completed more passes. You know, so again, you know,
some of them were forward.
When someone does something good, I think we have to sort of pat him on the back. And again, like the first leg, I thought he had another good game the other night. It suited him, you know, right down to the ground. So he had a poor game against West Brom. Yeah, absolutely no doubt about that. But he was good against Palace, good the other night. Well done to him.
Yeah, well done. Simon, where do you stand on Jorginho? Because it is quite an interesting issue with Chelsea supporters.
Well, I tie Jorginho and Kovacic together.
You don't call them that blimmin'
John? No, I don't. I'm one of those that's been unconvinced.
Yeah, well, like me,
about the two of them from very early on, actually. That's not to say they don't have good games. They occasionally do, but I think the moment those two play together, you're already two men down in terms of assists and goals. Mm. And I'm not saying that position is that's what it's all about, but it then puts pressure on players further forward. Now, I actually wrote, I saw it was a flip of the coin about 6 weeks ago. It's flip a coin, which of the players I went for, Kovacic or Jorginho. I ended up sort of outing myself as a Kovacic doubter, not for the first time in The Athletic, but I went, look, even I have to admit he's playing well at the moment, and I still got loads of stick. Liam loves him. I'm very much the kind of, I'm not sure he's the long-term answer, but Jorginho, I just think, like you've raised, too slow, and his passing is more often than not pretty ineffective, but there are games where it works. And in fairness to him, the way he played against Crystal Palace after having an absolute stinker against West Brom, full credit to him. Yeah. But I do think if Chelsea can get money for him, they should take it.
Well, if Sarri goes to Spurs, he could be off there, and that'll be funny. JK, is that I wonder, I mean, you know, we could all pitch in with this a bit. I've been thinking about this for a while, and I might pen something on this because it's been lodging in my brain. I remember for years, the reason why I ask you first, JK, because you've been on...
I'm the oldest member here.
You are, actually, even though we'd been going for about 5 years by the time you turned up. But anyway, it might...
In age, rather than...
Oh, that's true, yeah. But I think actually it might predate you, this, but I remember I used to coat Mikel religiously for years and years and years, and then
Lynn, who I sit next to, she absolutely hated him.
Yeah, well, I used to coat him off all the time, and then I had this almost Damasian conversion before Munich 2012. It has to be said, it suddenly twigged, actually, in amidst all these great...
Explain to you what he was doing.
Yeah, but in amongst all these great players in the midfield that Chelsea had, you know, the Michael Essiens, the Ballocks, the Lampards, Cole, actually, Mikel did exactly what he was there to do, and he was brilliant at it, and it's, it finally clicked with me. And then, of course, he went on, I think, to be the man of the match in the most important match we've ever had. So I have this doubt. I mean, maybe Jorginho is unfairly treated, perhaps by me. I don't know. What do you think?
And he's going to have the greatest game of his life in the.
He'll be man of the match in the Champions League final. Exactly, JK. Exactly. Got it in one.
But no, Lynn used to say he passes backwards and sideways. What does he do? What does he do exactly? And I used to say, but he plays much further up for Nigeria, so he must be a better player than you think he is, because he's obviously in a position here where he's doing a job. I said he's linking them together. But yeah, there is something to be said. I'm just amused by the fact that he seems, and apart from the West Brom, I mean, just how can I put it? I don't almost use the C word again. Kind of completely inept performance. There seem to be more games at the moment that we're saying he's working in than aren't. I mean, it seems that we've seen him so often be put under pressure and losing the ball and be slow and can't get back. And we wrote him off. Everybody's written him off, as we did with both of them, and said, let's get rid of them. And the next transfer window, we want them out. And then Tuchel comes in and they have a function. And yes, I'd be intrigued to see what team Tuchel would end up with if they're going to get rid of him, and what other players he's allowed in, if he's allowed any in at all. I mean, knowing what happened under Conte, you know, Marina might say, no, we're not. You'll just have to work with the players you've got, in which case... will we be seeing him sold? Will we be seeing people coming in? But I honestly think they're getting better. I think Kovacic and he are understanding what's going on. I mean, as I keep going on about this, what he said at the beginning, Tuchel, was it's a song that everybody has to learn. That's what he said in one of the first pressers. And they're all learning the song. And they're all getting better at doing what he wants. So the more they get better at it, is it necessary to have other players in that if these players are doing the job for him? And I honestly think that Jorginho is playing better and better since Tuchel's come in. So, let's see. But I'm sorry, I've run out of steam now. I can't remember.
Go on, Mark, very quickly, because we've got David waiting in the wings. So.
Yeah, it was just very quickly. There were two things. I said, if this was American football, he'd be a special teams player. Mm. You know, like a field goal kicker. He cannot play 38 games a season because, I agree with what Simon's basically saying. He's only effective in certain things. And also, if it is about songs, there's only certain songs he can sing.
Right. Okay.
I'll quickly jump in.
Oh, yeah.
10 seconds. Another reason why I'm a little bit perturbed is I think Billy Gilmour, I know, is really raw, but potentially is a better player. Oh.
Undoubtedly.
And it's been quite sad to see how he's been treated since. He's one of the negatives of Tuchel so far. And quickly, Mikel, I don't know whether you read the piece. Not that it sounds like I'm plugging myself, but the interview I did with him, and he sort of, I asked him about this, you know, having to play deeper at Chelsea. He said, well, someone has to be back there.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, it was Lampard, Ballack, guess. Yeah. It was going like someone had to defend. And I think there's part of him that was, obviously,
well, he played number 10 for Nigeria, didn't he?
Yeah.
Of course. So And
Nigerian fans blame Mourinho for ruining Mikel in terms of his standing. Like, they think he could have been a world star because he finished second to Messi in a youth tournament. His best player. But anyway,
it's a good point. Listen, before we let you go, Simon, I just want to, because I mean, you and I had a hilarious little text conversation after I asked you to come on, and we were talking about the fact that we've got Real Madrid, you know, in the semi-final. But, you know, what do you think about getting Real Madrid in the semi? Do we have a good chance?
Yeah, I mean, you'd rather Chelsea be... who would have thought we'd ever say this? You'd rather Chelsea face Real Madrid than the other two. I think, you know, City, PSG are better sides. Real Madrid have got the know-how. So Chelsea will still be the underdogs because Real Madrid have reached sort of four or five finals in the last 6-7 years. You make the favourites. Zidane, of course, there's the reunion with Thibaut Courtois, possibly Eden Hazard if he's fit or remotely fit. But I think Chelsea, you know, they've got a chance for sure, because they don't concede goals, but they're going to have to be far more clinical. They're going to have to be at their clinical best to go through the final. But
does that mean no Werner?
Well, I don't know whether you guys saw, I wrote a piece after the Palace game saying Werner has now got to wait for his chance to get back in the team again. I think the front three, I mean, Havertz isn't an ideal false nine, but he has potential to lead the line quite well. And I just think they look good with Mount and Pulisic. I mean, Pulisic, as you've already said, Jonathan, that he looks like potentially he could have the same end to this season as he had the last one. It's just, can his body hold up? It's been the biggest problem for him since he joined the club. And in fact, throughout his career, he just keeps picking up these injuries. And that was one of the things about the Porto game, wasn't it? Every time he went to the ground, he went, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, just as he's getting confident.
Right. Every single time, that's right.
But he's looking good. He's looking at, and I think that's exactly the kind of player that the Real Madrid defence don't want to face. With Werner, I find his technique a bit questionable, let alone his finishing. Good super sub, perhaps. You might do a Torres.
Well, I'm hoping that he will, Simon. I've got an image. I mean, the images have already been put up in this wonderful modern world of Timo's head put on Torres's body to replicate what happened to Barca. Look, finally, before we let you go, we've got City tomorrow in the FA Cup semi-final. Yeah. What do you reckon is going to happen tomorrow?
Unfortunately, you've got to make Man City strong favourites. Chelsea's record against City is pretty bad in recent years. And one can still have memories of the last time they faced each other. That's what I'm really interested in seeing is that game. Of course, I remember it for a number of reasons because controversially we were putting our finishing touches to the Lampard's going to go story, which we got a lot of stick for. I was actually as that game was going on, I was writing the big read that went with it. Because there was the fear that he might actually go that night. So I was only kind of partly paying attention, but I remember it being an absolute shambles.
Yeah.
I think hopefully Chelsea will be a lot tougher to beat this time. And, you know, City, perhaps they'll be a little bit distracted. You know, they've got a League Cup final coming up. But I've argued on Straight Out of Cobham that Brighton could actually be a bigger game.
No, it's the FA Cup, Simon. Come on.
Yeah. I know, but I'm taking my traditionalist hat off, and I always need to wear a hat in my condition.
Do you know what I'm holding? You know what I'm holding out for? Because I've already revealed, I love a coincidence and all of that. And serendipity. What I want to happen is that we win the FA Cup, we win the Champions League final, and we finish fifth, and Spurs finish fourth.
you want ultimate symmetry, don't you?
I do. And there's nothing like a little bit of history repeating.
And do you want Harry Redknapp in the ground as well?
Oh, wouldn't that be joyous? It would be joyous.
I wish to see it in the flesh.
Yeah, and I wish we could all be there to sing "Are You Watching Tottenham" like we did in 2012. But there you go, Simon. You've been nothing short of stellar, and it's so lovely to finally have you on the Chelsea Fancast.
No worries.
We will ply you with beer and get you back on a Monday so you can have to put up with us for 2 hours of nonsense sometime in the future.
Sounds good.
Because that would be a real treat for us. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real delight, mate.
My pleasure, guys. And enjoy the game on Saturday. Hope Chelsea turn up for a FA Cup semi-final against Man City. It's about time.
I certainly hope so. Simon, good to see you, mate. We'll see you again soon, hopefully. And there you go. Thank you, massive thank you to Simon Johnson from The Athletic there. Now, after this very quick break, we've got the lovely David Walker from Red But Never Red to talk to us about the FA Cup semi-final against Man City from the Man City perspective.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Cheech, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back to the Chelsea Fancast. I am Stamford Chidge, of course, and we've just had the brilliant Simon Johnson from The Athletic on. We have got, of course, Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Great to be here. Wasn't Simon fabulous?
I know. How remiss of me not to get him on years ago. You know, what a plonker I am.
How dare you, Chidge.
Sure, I know all these people. I'm just lazy and rubbish. Isn't that true, JK?
Your book of contacts is as long as my stairway.
Which is very long.
Very long, very long.
I'm glad you said stairway then, JK. We've also got the delightful Mark Meehan on tonight.
Good evening, and your book of contact is probably as long as my hair is at the moment and is badly in need of a cut, but that'll happen very soon.
I have to say, Mark, I would argue that when it comes to former Chelsea players, your contact book is longer than mine.
Yeah.
Mightily impressive.
I had a good day today because I had a catch-up with Nigel Spackman. We had a coffee, and then it was just one of those weird moments where, because I haven't been in a pub since before Christmas, and we're having a coffee, and there was a pub next door, and there was space outside, and just thought, you know what? A friend of mine is with us, like Ashley Roll. We said, oh, sod it, let's go out to the pub for a cheeky pint. And it was fantastic. just sitting out, just talking football with Spackers, and what the likely team and what the result will be tomorrow. So it was just a lovely moment today, really enjoyable.
Great stuff. Now, as you all know, it is time for this.
The Opposition View.
That's right, it's time for the Opposition View. And as you know, this was something that we kind of did when we were doing the incarnation of this, which was on the Love Sports Show. And I remember we did speak to this fine man several times when it got to talking about Man City. So I'm really both delighted and privileged to have back on the Chelsea Fancast David Walker from Red But Never Red. Hello, David. How are you?
Hello, Dave. I'm fine, mate. I just wondered if you could big me up a little bit more, please. It's underplaying it a wee bit.
The absolutely stratospherically brilliant, even though he's a City fan, David Walker. How's that?
Can I say
we're getting there.
Legend.
Legend would be good. Yeah, that would be good. David, no, it's really lovely to have you back on, because I mean I think what Jonathan and I particularly enjoy when we used to speak to you, you talk about City with honesty, really, and as well as a huge amount of intelligence, which makes it obviously highly suitable for this show. No, couldn't possibly be true. Let's kick off really about City, who of course are still in all four competitions. I mean, I'm absolutely certain they're going to win the Premier League. I'm absolutely certain they're going to beat Spurs, and they better beat Spurs next week. I don't want them to win the FA Cup because we're in it. And then there's a bit of the jury's still out with the Champions League because we may end up facing each other. But how realistic is the quadruple for City? And more to the point, what's the priority or priorities for Pep?
Right. Winning the quadruple, obviously it would be a unique, achievement. It's dreaming the impossible dream, but with every game it edges a little bit closer to being possible. But as a City fan, I think we have this typical City mindset of years ago that we'll never quite get there. So the quadruple is most definitely on, but I can somehow see it coming unstuck somewhere, but I don't know where. In terms of the priorities, the priority every season is to win the Premier League. Man City get a lot of grief for never having won the Champions League. But in fairness, we've only really been competing in it for 10, 11 years, and it's taken teams a lot longer than that to win the Champions League. Premier League priority, Champions League for me, not for every City fan, FA Cup, League Cup.
That's interesting. I mean, it's interesting what you say about the Champions League, because, I mean, I think the common, you're right, you said a lot of City fans, but not me, aren't really bothered with the Champions League. What have they got against the Champions League, David?
It's the history with UEFA. Mm. It goes back a long way in terms of UEFA have constantly tried to stitch us up on FFP, but that's a whole new topic. That's 3 hours of discussion, that one. But they also stitched us up a long time ago when we were playing CSKA Moscow. And Moscow had a ban on fans, and it was only imposed at the 11th hour that no fans were going to be allowed in. We had so many City fans had booked trips to Moscow, they got the tickets for the game, none of which was refundable, and certainly wasn't by UEFA. So it's a lot of enmity between ourselves and UEFA. And because, of course, the Champions League is there, it's their centre show, their centrepiece. And there's just a feeling of distrust with UEFA because of everything that's gone on over the years. And I think in recent years, without sounding like sour grapes, we've always gone out in controversial circumstances, either with VAR or with the handball with Llorente at Tottenham when we thought we'd scored the winner in the last minute. We had the controversy of the coach being smashed up at Liverpool and everything that derived from that. So I just think there's a lot of enmity between City and UEFA, and certainly the fans. But personally, and I think there's more and more coming round to it, we want to win it, if only to stick the middle finger up to UEFA and say, we've actually won your showpiece.
I mean, it's really interesting to hear that, because I mean, I think all three of us here will recognise that actually, bar a few unseemly events in Moss side back in the day, there's not a huge amount of enmity between City and Chelsea supporters. And in fact, actually, a lot of us would recognise there's a lot of similarities between the two clubs and the support, actually, more to the point. And it's really interesting to hear you talk about the Champions League, because that could have been the Chelsea supporter speaking. We have absolutely no love for UEFA, and possibly for similar reasons. They have no love for us. And I mean, I remember after we beat, goodness me, it might have been Liverpool in the Champions League. And it was the year they held it in Rome. And the whole stadium was singing, "Fuck UEFA, we're going to Rome." Do you remember that, Mark?
I do. And I think the other thing I'd say, there is such a similarity between us, you know, even going back years, you know, I've always seen us as the Man City of the South and City the Chelsea.
Not the Man United of the South, like Peter, what's his name, wanted.
Exactly. Never the Man United of the South for me. It's always been Man City. And even if you go back in history, you know, when we had Ken Bates as chairman, they had Peter Swales, you know, two people cut from the same cloth, and then the pair of them conspired between them to come up with the full Members' Cup. And then when they got the semi-final draw, the pair of them made damn sure that it was a Chelsea-Man City final.
And what a final it was.
What a final it was. Absolutely, yeah. Right. No, we still talk about that regularly, David, actually. I mean, I'm sure you lot don't, because obviously you lost, but there you go. Listen, we should talk about, I mean, you know, obviously you've just come off the back of the Champions League win against Dortmund. You played a day later than us. I didn't see the match, so I don't know if it was a tough gig or not. But is Pep likely to make a lot of changes for tomorrow?
I hope he doesn't. I mean, we've had 28 out of 30, 28 wins from the last 30 games. Pep has rotated. He probably will to some degree tomorrow. Certainly not to the degree that he did prior to the Dortmund game with the Leeds game, which was an abomination. He needs to put out the strongest 11. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the starting 11 from Dortmund, but I think that tomorrow's game is the toughest game that we're going to face or will have faced this season. So I think at most he'll probably do three changes, but for the Leeds game, we did seven, and there were some players who really shouldn't have even been near the ground, let alone on the pitch.
Mm. Why do you say it's going to be the toughest game of the season?
I think since Thomas Tuchel's come in, he's made Chelsea, he's put a structure into your play. There's more discipline. You're obviously much harder to beat because there's only the Baggies have managed to do that, and that has to go down as a fluke. I did think Frank Lampard was possibly shortchanged at the time, but proof's in the pudding. You know, Tuchel has put you back on track. At the time when Super Frankie left you, a Champions League place seemed a million miles away. So I did feel sorry for him. And we've got a little bit of a soft spot for Frank Lampard because he had that one City with the Celts. Yeah. But no, you're a tough gig and you're a hard team to break down. You'll press hard. We'll press hard, I think. I think it'll be quite an energetic game tomorrow. I don't think we'll cancel each other out. I think it will be high tempo, which I think suits both sides.
That's really interesting, actually, David, because, I mean, last week, Jonathan, we were saying, weren't we? In fact, it was Monday. It seems like ages ago, but it was Monday. We were really impressed with how Chelsea played against Palace. And we were saying, apart from the fact that we were playing in sky blue or whatever weird colour they call it, it was City-esque, wasn't it? The way we pinged the ball around, it was really quite a joy to watch.
35 minutes, yeah. I think, said it was completely magnificent. I mean, that's... Well, I keep going on about it, but the crispness of the passing and the speed of it is, it's slightly reminiscent of when Frank first came to the club, the beginning of last season, when I got all euphoric and eulogistic about it, and then it all fell apart. They have that as a kind of basis, which is this ability to pass in situations where you think they're not going to get the ball to anybody, which is very clever and very well drilled. But also the other thing to remember is that Tuchel will be looking at the Man City side to find a way to stop them from playing, because this is what he did with Atleti, and it's what he did and his analysis of Porto as well. I mean, one thing we didn't discuss at the end of the Porto game was the fact that their manager came up to Tuchel and had a go at him, as did the ex Real Madrid centre half, what's his name?
Pepe,
and abused him. And Tuchel apparently told him to f off. I don't know whether that was true or not.
I hope it's true.
But the very fact that they were throwing at us, I think it's non football again, because we were suppressing them, we were stopping them from playing. Well, fair enough. Now, if Tuchel can apply this to City, I'll be intrigued. And I think David's absolutely right. I think they are a completely different kettle of fish to any Chelsea side that's played them earlier on this season, because he's organised them so well, and it'll be a very interesting matchup. I'm really looking forward to it as a consequence. Mm.
So that having been said, David, and I thank you all for obviously clarifying what I didn't realise was that we are quite a tough test these days, but. One player who's I think really come into his own, and I look at this quite closely, you know, one with an England eye on, but the other with a, you know, this is a kid that's come up through City's academy, and actually Pep, I think, has managed, you know, incredibly carefully. He's not been quick to rush him in, and maybe that was the right thing to do. And he's beginning to really, really blossom, I think. And that's Phillip Foden, David. I mean, how important is he becoming for City?
Well, Foden is becoming an integral part of the team. Pep took pelters off people for 3 years. Oh, put him out on loan, do this, do that. He's stifling him. There was an idiot off the Sun who said, oh, Foden signed a six-year contract. He'll be sitting on the bench for 6 years. It was complete baloney. Pep has brought him through. I remember Pep saying, why would you want to go out on loan when he can have training sessions with Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva and learn from these guys? And this season, he's become so much more resolute in terms of his capabilities. He's there. He's a superstar in the making, and he's pretty well down that road already. And as things stand, he gets in. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. He's not, oh, shall we put him in or not? He's got the intelligence. He's got the skill. He's got the energy of youth. And at this season of all seasons, there's been such a busy season with back-to-back games. He is indispensable. And if he doesn't start at Wembley tomorrow, well, God help us. He's got to be on that team sheet. And he is going to be a Manchester City legend because he's a fan. Hopefully he's there for, well, the duration of his entire career.
Mark?
Yeah, David, the question I was going to ask was actually about Foden. And yeah, obviously he does mirror sort of like Mason Mount on our side. He is becoming like an essential player at Man City and first name on the team sheet. Looking at the side that sort of played the other night, you obviously had Mahrez, De Bruyne and Foden up front. Sterling's out of the side at the moment. So if you're thinking about the side tomorrow, yeah, I can't see Foden making way. I can't see De Bruyne making way. Do you think Sterling will play tomorrow up front with, you know, or will he keep the same sort of top three as he played the other night?
Well, personally, I hope he goes with the same top three, which wouldn't have always been the case. But you know what they say about class being permanent and form being temporary? Unfortunately, Raheem has had a dip in form at the present time. It's been going on, I don't know, half a dozen matches. So I would put Mahrez in ahead of Sterling, which is something I wouldn't have always said. But at the moment, I'd go with that. I'd go with the same front three. But when we're playing this false number nine, we can interchange it. We can have Kevin De Bruyne as the false nine. You can have Gundogan. You can have Bernardo. That's what hopefully gives us the edge on a lot of the teams, because they don't actually know who they're going to be coming up against in the front line.
David, why has John Stones become so good? What has happened to change his form over the last year? Because he seems to have improved out of all dimensions.
Yeah. The guy's had a complete renaissance, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think for maybe a couple of transfer windows, if somebody had come in with an acceptable offer, he would have gone. And the strange thing about this season, if Eric Garcia had committed to City rather than saying he wants to go back to Barcelona, it wouldn't have surprised me if John Stones had been sold last summer. What he's done, apparently, he's got his personal life sorted, because there was all manner of things going on there and personal turbulence. But he's just stuck at it. He's got rid of the injuries that had bedeviled him and obviously stopped the rhythm of his play. And the guy has just got to have full marks for having the self-confidence and the self-belief to come through, reimpose himself, reinvigorate his career. And I think you cannot underestimate the influence of Ruben Dias, though, by his side. Dias has come in. It's a bit early to say he's Vincent Kompany-esque. It's been one season, but he's had such a profound influence. I think that aligned to Stones' determination to get back on track and to realise his potential, apart from that little blip for England, and we thought, oh no, please don't regress back to the old John Stones. He has been an absolute stalwart. But strangely enough, if Pep is to make changes, it wouldn't surprise me if Aymeric Laporte comes in for John Stones, purely for the rotation, nothing to do with the actual form.
So, I mean, that having been said, David, and I agree with you both, actually, I think John Stones has absolutely, you know, revitalised his career at City and is looking like the player we all thought he would be. So how do we get at you tomorrow? I mean, is it, you know, really pressing, you know, from the front, which is something that Tuchel likes to do, putting your defence under pressure and then seeing how we deal with that? Is that the way to get at you?
Interesting question. As I said before, I think both teams will go with the high press. Mm. We're normally very composed at the back. When we first got Edison in there, he just transformed it and he strokes the ball around. I think your danger man is probably, for us, it's Pulisic is the main man. That's the guy who can cause us some big problems. Mount's obviously excellent. He can strike from outside the box. It's a difficult one to see where we are at our most, you know, at our weakest. I suppose it would normally be on the counter-attack, but I wouldn't expect you to play that way. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Chelsea are going to, you know, get to us, get round us or whatever, because the centre-back pairing, even if it's Laporte or Dias or if it's Stones, it's very solid. Depends who we play at left-back. If we play Cancelo, who is a right-footed player, so you could potentially get some joy down the left flank, because Cancelo is excellent going forward, but he's not a vintage fullback and certainly not a natural left back.
It's Alonso all over again.
Yeah, you could well. Yeah, I can understand you saying that. Yeah, depends. We might play Zinchenko, who is naturally left-footed, not as speedy, but he's a solid guy. But if there is a weakness, I'd say it's whether or not you can get at us down the left flank.
Interesting. So, I mean, how do you think it's going to go tomorrow? I mean, we all think we would say we were underdogs going into this. Although, I mean, one thing we're beginning to discover, and we have been discovering recently, it's funny, isn't it? When we live in a little bit of a Chelsea bubble, and we pick holes in a lot of things that we can see that aren't quite right. And I keep hearing a lot of other people saying, "Oh, you know, Chelsea have actually got probably the second best squad in the league to City." So, you know, I still think that, you know, that notwithstanding, we are still very much underdogs tomorrow. But how do you see it going, David?
I agree that you are underdogs, but you are more than capable of springing a surprise. And if we were to lose, it wouldn't be a massive surprise. Now, I don't want to play down my side's chances, and I don't want to be pessimistic. I think we are capable of winning. I think we will win. Tight game, maybe 2-1. But no, I honestly think, you know, with Tuchel coming in, he's improved you to a level that you are difficult to beat. And I think there will only be a goal in it either way.
Interesting stuff. You reckon 2-1, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. David, you have been nothing short of brilliant, as I knew you would be. It's been absolutely lovely to speak to you again, actually. As I said, we used to love speaking to you when we were on Love Sport. With a bit of luck, we can get you back on May the 7th, because, of course, we play you again in the league. And Lord help us, there's still a chance that we might be meeting up on the 29th of May. I mean, do you think that might be a possibility?
It has to be. There's only PSG and Real Madrid to prevent it happening.
Who are they? Who are they? Come on.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll get the turkey out. I don't know about the Christmas crackers, but my goodness, what a way to end the season. We can have Sergio Aguero come on as a last-minute sub and seal the deal, and we win the Champions League.
Yes, okay. Well, if we're not in it, I would... I don't often say this, actually, because normally I hate any other... I'm very much of the Andy Goldstein school, that I hate everybody in Europe that's English other than us. But I have to say, I wouldn't begrudge City winning the Champions League if we were not able to win it. I have to say that. And I wish you luck, obviously, for the rest of the season. It's always, if anybody but Liverpool for me in the
I was going to say, we share a common loathing, don't we?
We do share a common loathing of the Scousers, the Red Scousers, as it should be. But I do wish you luck. I don't think you're going to need much luck to win the Premier League this season. I think that's a shoo-in. But clearly, I don't wish you luck tomorrow. But other than that, it's been great to speak to you, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
Very kind of you, Dave. Thanks very much for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. There you go. That's David Walker there from... Red but never red. I mean, if you've got a very broad mind about football and you don't just live in a Chelsea world like we all do, David's blogs on City are really, really, really worth reading, because they're hugely intelligent and really well written. So there you go. We will be back in a minute to give you our version of events of what we think is going to happen tomorrow.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show with me, Stamford Chidge, and Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Hello, everybody.
And the absolutely brilliant, I mean, Mark's knowledge puts me and Jonathan to shame. It's such an honour having Mark on the show. Mark Meehan, everybody!
Yay!
Absolutely.
Get out your blue flags and your celery. Chelsea's going to win at Wembley.
Yes, indeed. It's exciting, isn't it? Now, before we get into that excitement, I've got something almost as exciting to tell you. But as you all know, we've been doing this thing for the last few weeks with football prizes, or at @football_prizes on Twitter. And every week they put a signed Chelsea shirt into a competition where you can pay, usually it's either $4.95 or $5.95, to get a ticket which will enter you into a draw, which they pick out a random ball, not a hot ball or a cold ball like the FA do, but a random ball. Up to 99, they sell 99 tickets, and if they pick your number out, you win the signed and framed shirt. Now, as you know, last week they had Mason Mount, which was a real big ticket item, and it was such a big ticket item they had to do the draw early because the tickets all sold out within about 3 days. So a lot of you missed out. So you need to, if you snooze, you lose, I think is the moral of that story. Anyway, this week, next Wednesday, they've got quite an interesting one coming up because they've got a signed and framed shirt with the signature being Thomas Tuchel. And he's chosen the number one shirt, which doesn't augur well for Kepa or Mendy in my book, if Tommy Tuchel's going to be our number one. But nevertheless, a Tommy Tuchel signed and framed shirt is up for grabs next Wednesday. So if you want to get on that, get a piece of that action, then you need to go to the web address, which I think is footballprizes.co.uk/product/Tuchel. But fear not, I have it logged on our Twitter, on Chelsea Fancast Twitter page. It's pinned, so it's the first tweet you will see on our feed at Chelsea Fancast. And it's also on our Facebook page at Chelsea Fancast. So if you want to enter into that draw, go either there and you'll find the correct link and you can go and buy a ticket to be entered into the Thomas Tuchel signed and framed shirt draw. So there you go. Now, as I said, marginally more exciting than that is the fact that we have yet another semi-final. For all three of us sitting around this table, it's almost, I don't know how they feel, I shall ask them, but it's almost beyond comprehension when I sit here talking about, you know, the stats that Chelsea now have. 25th appearance in an FA Cup semi-final going back to 1911 when JK first started going. We've reached the last four.
1905, actually.
I know, but you were at the 1911 semi-final, that I do know. We've reached the semi-final in at least one competition in 25 of the last 31 series. It'll be our 15th appearance in a final since 1915, should we get through. This is our fourth, will be, well, if that happens, it'll be our fourth FA Cup final appearance in five seasons. I mean, Mark, you know, we all grew up, you know, Jonathan grew up watching, I mean, when Jonathan first went, it was in the early 60s, we were in Division 2, when you first started going, we just won the FA Cup, and then it was doom and gloom. I have to pinch myself sometimes to think the number of times we've been to Wembley, more times than any other club, I think, the new Wembley. We've had 23 appearances at the new Wembley. Man United are next with 19. It's astonishing, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible. I think back sort of to the 1990s, and that's when I was doing the Chelsea Independent fanzine. You know, and I remember even putting on the cover, like, you know, we really just want success for this club. You know, brilliant support. And the amount of times we always fell sort of like, you know, at the final hurdle. So, you know, I'd have just taken one FA Cup win, you know, just one cup final. So I'd have died happy in 1997, like, you know, just winning the FA Cup. But the amount of times we've won since, and especially since the new Wembley, as you said, it's become our second home. Now, I think the only thing I would say is, I don't know if you've seen it this week, they've opened the new staircase at Wembley, you know, the Olympic steps. You know, so if we were there tomorrow, yeah, we'd, you know, and we'd spent the morning in the pub, we'd have a bloody steep climb up the stairs before the game, because they've got rid of the ramps going into Wembley now, and they put a staircase in, which just looks ridiculous. Like, you're going to be knackered, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see when we get back there next season.
Jonathan's looking absolutely horrified here.
JK, you know, go online. The amount of bloody stairs they put in now.
He'll never get his Zimmer frame up there, mate. I tell you.
But again, from a disability point of view as well, I was quite surprised because again, from a ramp. Yeah. You know, someone's in a wheelchair. So unless they put lifts somewhere, you know, it's a bloody great staircase now. So, you know, that's a bit of a worry one. But I digress. You know, Wembley is our second home, you know. This competition is our competition. You know, we've been in sort of like three out of the last four finals. Yeah, and hopefully tomorrow, you know, we'll make another final.
Can I abseil?
Can you abseil?
Yeah, up it.
I don't know. Can you?
Might have to.
Well, I could. Well, I'll get a mate to hold a rope at the top and pull myself up if necessary. I'll have a look. Where can you look on this? On the Wembley site? Is it on the...
I think they put some comms out yesterday. You know, They had a load of blokes in hard hats, you know, strategically spaced out on the steps. So we're opening the Olympic steps, and I just thought, where's the ramp gone?
Interesting stuff. I mean, it is brilliant, JK. But I have to say, what was quite interesting, because you know I like to do a little bit of homework, you know, I put a bit of stuff together, and I looked at Chelsea's head-to-head record against City in the FA Cup, and I have to say, it makes for some rather salutary reading. That we've only met them six times. We met them in, first of all, in 1915, which, if memory serves me correct, we actually... Well, I know we beat them. We beat them 2-1. But, of course, that year we went on to lose to Sheffield United in the Khaki Cup final, didn't we?
We did, unfortunately.
You were there?
At Old Trafford, yeah.
Yeah. 1948, we lost 2-0. This would have been in an early round, because that would have been January. In 1971, Mark and JK, when as cup holders, we lost to them 3-0.
Yeah, they're a very good side then, if you remember.
Yeah, and that would have been, again, early round. It was January the 23rd, so...
Fourth round,
exactly.
Bitterly disappointing, I remember being
yeah, we got but... passed out in the third round and then lost to City. It was on Match of the Day that night as well. Yeah, because we played in yellow and blue and City played in red and black. Mm.
Well, we got the last laugh that season because, of course, we knocked them out of the European Cup Winners' Cup semi-final over two legs. To then go on and beat, of course, Real Madrid in the final. So, you know, all was not lost. Of course, recent memory, this was alluded to by both David and Simon, I think. We lost 2-1 to them in 2013. Now, I remember this really, really well because it was the first FA Cup semi-final this century, shall we say, because I didn't make 1997 for various reasons, or 1994, but it's the first semi-final I missed this century because I had been filming in Dubai, and I thought I'd worked it out to a treat that I would get back in time to at least watch it on television. I knew I couldn't go, which is a real pisser. I got the timings horrifically wrong. So I was up in the air, about 35,000 feet in the air, with no idea what was going on. So I missed that one. That was, of course, when Aguero stamped on Luiz, wasn't it? That was horrible. We then lost again to them in 2014 in what would have probably been the, I don't know, February the 14th?
I think it's fifth round.
Fifth round, yeah, got to be, hasn't it? I don't really remember that. And this one... This is nuts. This has escaped my memory bank. I have no memory of this match whatsoever. I'm going to rely on you two to remind me. We beat Man City 5-1 in the FA Cup, again, fifth round, I think, on the 21st of February 2016. Why on earth do I not remember that?
Didn't they have reserves out for the whole of the game?
Yeah, I think they might. I looked at their team and it looked pretty shonky, it has to be said.
Judge, you must remember the League Cup final where we played very well against them and lost on...
Yeah, but that was the League Cup. I'm just focusing on the FA Cup.
I know you are, but I'm talking about games where we've given them games. At the moment, we're sounding as if we don't ever play well against them.
Well, no, in the FA Cup, we don't. That's my point. There's that one win that you saw in 1915... And then there's the one where we beat them 5-1 in 2016. And Mark, I don't remember that match at all. And I mean, Jonathan's right. They put a shonky B team out and we had our first team out. There's no doubt about that. But I don't remember that. How bizarre.
No, I think they were in the hunt for three or four trophies at that stage. So something had to give. You know, they had a lot of fixture congestion. So they put a really weakened side out against us. So, we've always taken the FA Cup seriously at Chelsea. So we put a really serious side out. And I think from memory, it was the fifth round of the FA Cup. Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Well, I mean, the first thing really to talk about other than that, I mean, it's about time we turned them over in an FA Cup match, that's for sure, let alone a semi-final. Now, I wrote my lineup because you know I love to do a bit of that because I basically found an app that allows me to do it. And it's like a kid with a new toy. Now, originally, my lineup, I have to make one change because I didn't know at the time that Christensen will not be available, but I had picked the following. This is what I think he will pick, not necessarily what I would like him to pick. Kepa in goal, Rudiger, Christensen is not available, so I now it's confusing. Zouma or a Silva will come in my view. Azpilicueta, because he always starts. Chilwell, Gilmore, not Conte, Jorginho, James, Pulisic, Havertz, Mount up front, because I think
you know, he's figured out that's the three he likes to play up front. That's his best attacking formation. So the interesting selections here are quite possibly Kepa. Will he play Kepa? Because he has till now. And you know what they do in FA Cup matches, these foreign managers. And Gilmour for Conte, because I don't think he'll want to risk Kante before Brighton. But I could be wrong. What do you think, JK?
Oh, I don't know. I think he thought that he wasn't going to give 90 minutes to Conte in the Champions League, and he was fabulous.
And he said he's fully. He said he's okay to play, didn't he?
Yeah. But I think he'll play him. Actually, I think he'll play Conte. I think he'll not play him in the Brighton game if he's going to give him a rest. I think that's likely. I don't know who he's going to pick. You know, I wouldn't pick Kepa at all at this stage. Now I'd pick Mendy in a semi-final. But I'm just worried that Silva's still injured, having picked up that injury. He tried to come back on, I know, at the time, but perhaps he doesn't want to risk him, in which case, who would be the other centre-half?
Zouma.
Dave Zouma and Rudiger. Yeah. Would it just be the three of them? Yeah. But yeah, I think that might be the pairing. The pairing plus one. Chilwell obviously would, I think, I thought Chilwell was excellent during the week. Chilwell appears to have upped his game, actually, to being an excellent attacker again, as he was originally when he first joined the club. And I think he would oust Alonso just because his defending capabilities, as we've established, are far superior. But it's just a question then of, is Kovacic still injured? He's still with a hammy. Is he unlikely to get back in?
Kovacic, what we know from the press today is that Kovacic and Christensen are not going to play.
Right. Of course, yes, the press.
So I reckon it'll be Rudiger, Zouma, and given what you say about Silva, because I forgot about that, I have a suspicion you're right, which means it'll have to be Rudiger, Zouma and Aspi.
Who would be on the bench as a substitute from a centre-half point of view?
Emerson.
He'd play centre? Of course he would. He has played in there before. You're absolutely
right. So if something happens to Aspi, you've got Reece James. If something happens to Zouma, then you move Rudiger in and you bring Emerson onto the left.
Well, do you think he'd play Reece James, or is he going to play Odoi?
I think he'll play Reece James, because I think that's what he's come down to. I think he's basically decided that if we're playing against teams that can really hurt us, you need more defensive wing-backs than attacking wing-backs. Right. And although, you know, Odoi's done a really good job in his tracking back, Reece James, I mean, Jesus Christ, we didn't talk about this in the Porto bit. What a bloody rock he is becoming. He was superb against Porto, wasn't he?
No, I just think because Odoi, actually, in the Palace game that we've established, took players on much better than he has been. And but no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that you're absolutely right as well. Havertz, the three that he chose, all of whom have slipped my memory other than Havertz. Havertz, Pulisic and...
Mount.
And Mount, actually, Barney Rone was rather amusing about Mount in The Guardian, not Mount, about Havertz in The Guardian, saying that he felt that he still contributed as if he was a strange Jane Austen character who'd been abandoned by the author. And had you felt that he should actually finish the 90 minutes wearing a ruff, as if it was something from an Elizabethan tragedy, which similarly I thought was, there's a kind of, not effete, but the fact he wafts about a bit, there's that, and still tries to find shots from strange angles, which is what he did in the Palace game. But slowly but surely, we're beginning to get glimpses of what a talented player he is. I just wonder how long, whether he will fit into Tuchel's plan. I mean, obviously, they're not going to get rid of him, but I'm just fascinated by what Tuchel will ultimately do with this club, with this team, because he is clearly an absolutely world-class coach. Yeah. And it's joyous watching. But I think Pulisic, as we've been establishing, is coming into his own again. I just, please don't get injured, please, if possible. And let's hope that three can click. But I think that we may have seen Werner down the pecking order, because I think he fancies Ziyech more as well to bring him on.
Well, I think you know, and I've said it time and time again, Werner is not the number nine. He's not even a false number nine. He's an inside forward, and he's very good at doing that, which means his position is one of the two behind whoever he plays as the striker. And if you think about it, you've got Pulisic, Mount and Ziyech. And I think, as you said, JK, right now, they're all ahead of Werner in that respect. Mark, I know you wanted to come in.
Yeah, this is part of my lunchtime sort of discussion I talked about earlier. So,
with Spackers?
Yeah, so...
What did he say?
Well, I think what he was saying was, yeah, definitely a 3-4-3. And I think it depends who's fit, you know. I'd go for Mendy in goal. And I think what we said today was that, you know, the way Man City will play, those three guys up front, you need your best three central defenders. And if people are fit, you know, it would have to be Dave, Rudiger and probably Christensen. But we didn't think Christensen was fit. So we then went for Silva.
But we don't think he's fit.
But if he's not fit, by default, then it becomes Zuma. At the top end, you keep the same three. You know, again, that's part of taking the game to City as well. So it has to be Pulisic, yeah, it has to be Havertz, has to be Mount. And then the four, yeah, Spacker's viewpoint to me, and I would agree with him, is you've got to play Reece James. Absolutely brilliant game. And again, a lot of City's threat comes down that left-hand side. And as good as, because I originally said, well, what about Hudson-Odoi? JK just said, he said, absolutely not. He said, you've got to play Reece James. You need that strength in defence on that side. And it's, as you just said, better to have a defensive wing back at, you know, rather than an attacking wing back, because, you know, City will come down that left-hand side quite significantly. Jorginho picks himself. I'd start with Kante, because I just think, even if he's not 100% fit, but it sounds like he is, I think far better to start a player than have to bring him off, than actually bring him on and then he breaks down. So I'd have Kante and Jorginho. And in the end, went for Alonso on the left-hand side. He hasn't played for about 4 or 5 games. So I think, you know,
Won't they rinse him with their pace, though, Mark?
Well, I don't know.
And pull him out of position.
Yeah, but also more of their threat is down the left hand side. You know, so I think, you know, Alonso. You know, I just think Tuchel hasn't played him for about 4 or 5 games, and he does rotate, and he hasn't rotated for a while. So I would play Chilwell. You know, certainly because he's a better player. But I think if we're trying to predict, fair enough. Yeah, I thought he would probably opt for Alonso. Or he might opt for Emerson, because he's played Emerson in the FA Cup. He played him against Sheffield United.
Jonathan's got to look like somebody's farted in front of him.
I can see. it's like a game trying to predict what Tuchel will do in terms of the player.
Although we got it spot on, absolutely spot on for Porto. Although, to be utterly honest, you know, I picked Kovacic... Because I didn't pick Kovacic. What is it? Yeah, I didn't pick Kovacic, but not because I didn't know it was because he was going to be injured. I mean, I just thought that they'd pick Kante ahead. Anyway, moving along. Here's a question for you, because, I mean, you know, in a sense, the selection that we're talking about perhaps underlines this. It's very hard to know how Johnny Foreigner coach really treats the FA Cup. I mean, we've just talked about Pep playing a B-side against us when they got whooped 5-1. You know, dear old Antonio Conte, you've got to love him for that. He played a pretty much boss side every time we turned up, and he really clearly wanted to win the FA Cup, and apart from that awful abomination against Arsenal, he duly did. Mourinho used to always take it very, very seriously. And now I'm trying to remember what the others were like. Sarri, I have a suspicion he didn't. So it's interesting for me always, Jonathan, how seriously these boys really take it. My guts tell me that Tuchel's going to take it seriously, because I think he wants to win a trophy, and I think he wants to win it quick.
Completely, yeah. As he keeps saying it, to manage Chelsea means you're supposed to win trophies. So this is his out, isn't it? If he doesn't win the Champions League, he hasn't got with the other thing. He's going to just win the FA Cup. So, I think he'll obviously take it seriously. And also, each game, I think they get better. As I say, other than the blip, the West Brom blip, you know, because as we said, the Palace game, they played the best they'd played all season. That was certainly the best they'd played under Tuchel. It was 35 minutes of sheer brilliance. So... I think he will view this just as a continuation of the season. He says we take every game as seriously as the last one. I don't think he will ever go into any match thinking I can take this easy. I think it'll just be a question of who's available and who he thinks can
can beat the opposition. I think he'll have worked out the plan that he wants to have. I mean, I'd be intrigued to see how much pressing we do and how slick the passing is, because if it's anything like the Palace game, we'll be a complete shock to City. Blimey, they won't expect that.
Mark, I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think he's going to take it seriously? I think Jonathan and I do.
I'd agree. I think, you know, he's only got two options now, and he's also at the moment only got an 18-month contract. And the way our club, you know, rolls is you have to win trophies. So why would you not take the FA Cup? Irrespective, he may not necessarily know, but I think he will know the history of the FA Cup. You know, why would you not take this seriously when there's a good chance, you know, he could end up, of the two, this is his better chance of a trophy, I think. So he will take this very seriously. And I think, you know, he will have a plan to try and get at City.
Well, I it'd be interesting, you know, my guts tell me, in terms of how this might pan out, is I think excuse me, dear old Rick Glanville in his pre-match briefing, I think, has alluded to this, is that one way to get at City is to do this, you know, very high press, get all the front players pressing them, you know, immediately to keep them pegged back, and also to play with a high line so you can jest the midfield and give them less room to operate because they're very, very good. But I think another point that he made that was absolutely bang on, you've got to take your chances against City. You've got to take chances. And he made a really interesting point. All the defeats that they've had this season, I mean, Leeds is a great example. Leeds had two shots on target and they scored both of those goals. And that's what you have to do. And he also said something like, what did Bielsa do? I mean, Bielsa's quite fascinating, as we all know, as a manager. But what Leeds did, I'm trying to find it now. Here we go. They actually man-marked. Basically, Bielsa's successful strategy was to restrict their channels by man-marking central midfielders Alexis Sinchenko and Bernardo Silva. I mean, whether Tuchel does something like that is a moot point. But what I do think he'll do, JK, which is what we've been really talking about a lot all night, is he's going to make us very defensively solid. He's going to make us really hard. He's going to make it really hard for City to play against us. So I actually do, I mean, even though I don't see us doing what a lot of Chelsea managers have done in the past, which is to basically park the bus and try and hit him on the break, I don't think we're designed to do that. But I do think he's going to really make us hard to break down and try and nick a goal, you know, whether that be on a set piece that City are vulnerable from, or using something that I've seen us do a lot more of recently, and I have to say I'm quite happy to see this, is rather than all the time try and play out from the back with nice little pretty triangular patterns, sometimes ping one over the top to the likes of Mount or Pulisic. Why not? It works.
Well, it's the way that City play to an extent as well. I fear this compressing the midfield. The problem is that they're very good at finding a pass through the middle of that compression and having Mahrez or somebody swift run onto it. And their shooting is unbelievably accurate. Also, the speed that somebody gets into the penalty area is very accurate. So that could be our undoing. But I think the example of, not that they play the same, but the example of the way that we played Atleti and pushed everything off to the side so there was nowhere that they could actually create anything was a joy to behold. The skill of the players who'd been educated, who learnt the song that he wants them to come up with, to actually make to stifle every single moment of creativity. Now, it's going to be tricky with City because they're a very creative side, but I await with immense interest to see what plan he comes up with. But as you say, it depends on, I think, Pulisic and Mount or whoever being much more accurate than they have been with their shooting.
Or Havertz.
Havertz, indeed. I haven't mentioned him because I was imagining him with a
sword, rough on.
A sword and... Yeah. And Pete Tatton, one of those.
Like, I see him as Lord Percy, really, rather than Edmund. But I mean, Mark, you know, one of the things that I mean, alluding, you know, kind of picking up from what I was saying about making us really, really hard to beat. And one of the things that I've noticed, particularly against Madrid and Porto recently, you know, teams that have enough good players to take you apart if you're not careful. And I've noticed the way that he's quite often. When out of possession, Chelsea have basically been playing 5-3-2. So, you know, the wing backs come back and they're very much part of the defensive unit. Mount drops back with Jorginho and Kante, leaving Havertz and Pulisic up front. And I think he'll do that against City. That helps to congest the midfield. It helps to push players out wide. And it still leaves, you know, Havertz and Mount up front, so an out ball can be really useful.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, like, we haven't shared the script beforehand, and that's exactly the conversation I was having earlier today, is it will be a 3-4-3 formation, but, you know, to deal with City, that three will move back to a five when it needs to. You need strength in defence against a side like City. Yeah, so it will become a 5-3-2 when it is needed. But I think, yeah, our success and our way to win this game is we're not going to do what previous managers have done and park the bus. You know, it did for Sarri, it did for Conte. Probably
for Frank.
And actually, Frank had an idea moment as well against City early in the season. Is we build it on a strong defence, you know, getting behind the ball when we need to, and then, you know, using those three players up front, you know, a really fast-moving pressing game when the time comes. And absolutely agree, we need to take the chances when they come.
Definitely. Now, in terms of how it might go, I mean, you know, JK kind of scolded me, and I quite like being scolded by JK. I find it quite grounding, actually. But he scolded me on being a bit of a negative Nora about our cup performances against City. I'm just going to make him be more scolding, possibly, because the wonderful flash score, which I nick a lot of the stats from, tells us that Man City have not lost any of their three meetings with Chelsea at the new Wembley Stadium. 1-2, drawn 1. Basically, Pep Guardiola's side have been eliminated at this stage in two of his four campaigns in charge. So that's positive. But Guardiola is unbeaten in all five managerial head-to-head meetings with Tuchel. 1-3, drawn 2. Clearly none of them when Tuchel was at Chelsea, of course. And I thought that was a really interesting question that was asked at the press conference today, was that... Basically, does Tuchel have a chance of beating Pep Guardiola because now he's got a decent side to manage, which I thought was quite... They didn't say it like that, but that's kind of what they meant, which is quite cheeky. So given... I mean, we're underdogs for this. Let's be under no illusion here. City are a bloody good side. If they turn up on Saturday and they're 100% of their game, we are going to find it very, very hard. But, JK, it's an FA Cup semi-final. Anything can happen, eh?
And we can stifle them. And if we stifle them, they might get frustrated and we might get a lucky goal or a free kick or something. Or, yes, who knows? Who knows? But I know I wait for my euphoria about about Tuchel's creation to be, to use mixed metaphors, have the carpet pulled from under me as we get heavily beaten. But I'll be intrigued because I think he'll learn from it. I think he'll learn from anything that happens over the next few games to the end of the season to make the side into a better one. But he then needs to be backed by the board and then we'll see what occurs. But it's been a great journey so far and I'm looking forward to it being sustained tomorrow.
You're going to stick a score on there for us?
2-1.
2-1 to the Chelsea.
Yes, the Blue Boys winning 2-1 at Wembley.
Lovely. Mark, and you know, how do you see it going? What do you think the score is going to be?
I think it's going to be tight. I think it could even go... There is extra time tomorrow?
Yeah, extra time and then penalties.
Yeah, I could see it going to extra time. You know, us winning either 3-2 in extra time or winning on penalties. It could be that close tomorrow. I think there could be goals in the game. Yeah. So yeah. I'm going for a 3-2 in extra time. Yeah.
Okay. I have no idea at all. Although what I really hope for, I hope for a complete and utter shithouse performance to make me proud of my lovely Blue Boys, like we have done in the last few weeks. I mean, I didn't expect us to knock out Atletico Madrid. I was a little bit more confident about beating Porto, but you knew that they were a difficult, awkward side to play against, and we handled them, I thought, brilliantly. This is going to be a real test tomorrow. I think this is going to be the hardest game that Tuchel's had so far. I mean, even more so than Atleti, actually. You know, City are, on their day, a very good side. Let's be under no illusion here. But, yeah, let's shithouse the bastards and come out with a 2-1 win. That's what I reckon.
Nobody thought we'd beat Atletico. In fact, nope. Everybody was convinced that we would be drubbed and it was the worst possible draw anybody could have got in the
what was it, the quarterfinals, mm-hmm. and not the quarterfinals, sorry, it was the one before the last, the 16, round of 16. And look how we came through. So, if he can find the key to stopping them from playing, which I think he's very capable of, I think we'll do very well.
Yeah, that's what I hope. I mean, the other thing, of course, is I could say, well, it's written in the stars, you know, because another reason, of course, and we do this quite often, we lost the FA Cup final last year, which was robbed from us, let's be honest. I think we were mugged off totally. And it's very Chelsea to go back the next year and win it. And if you read my article in football.london tomorrow, which will be coming out in the morning, you will see my thinking on this about how coincidence and serendipity plays a part in this. And of course, in 2012, we won the Champions League and the FA Cup final against Liverpool. And I just want to see history repeat itself. So I'm really, you know, I'm ever the optimist. 2-1, nuggety, shithouse, 2-1 win, and I'll be happy. Anyway, let's hope everybody's happy come, let me just think, 5:30, so 7:30, 8 o'clock if it's extra time. Let's hope we're all happy tomorrow. By the way, me and Dino are going to be on That Chelsea podcast tomorrow after the game, talking to the lovely lads about that. So there you go. We will, of course, be back on Monday. Me and JK will be back on Monday for the Chelsea Fancast. And we will be joined on Monday by the two Marks. Now, as far as the Chelsea Fancast is concerned, there are only two Marks. Worrell and Meehan are back as a couple, as an item. The best double act since Hinge and Brackett or Morecambe and Wise. Choose your famous comedic pairing and then up it. But yeah, it'd be great to see Mark Worrell back. And of course, Mark Meehan again. Looking forward to Monday, Mark?
I am indeed, yes. Teaming up with Mr. Worrell again, the Speedy and Dixie combination.
There we go. Much better pairing. I like that.
Much better pairing. Or Hasselbank and Good Johnson.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was thinking that.
Glorious Chelsea unpredictability. Since Tuchel come in, and we end it with a victory, you know, tomorrow, and we'll have something positive to talk about.
If we win tomorrow and it is an utter shithouse win, I think you, me, Jonathan and Mark will be unbearable and uncontainable on Monday. So
it'll be a long show if we win.
Yeah, let's hope it happens, because it'll be, hey, it's great fun, whatever happens. That's the beauty of the Chelsea Fancast. But anyway, yeah, me, JK, Mark Worrell, Mark me, and me looking back at the FA Cup semi-final against City, and of course we'll be looking ahead to Tuesday night's Premier League match against Brighton soon. Do not miss that. Don't touch that dial, or whatever you do these days in the modern world. Mark, absolutely brilliant to see you, as always.
Oh, no, absolutely brilliant to be on. And clearly, with Monday night's show, yeah, will we be getting an official paint supplier as sponsor for the show? The Dulux dog yesterday.
Yeah.
Fantastic that was, yeah.
Yeah, well, if
other than Tottenham could actually make a balls up of a sponsorship.
If Chelsea had a paint sponsor, it would be Farrow and Ball, wouldn't it, really? You lost, John. They are the decorators and paint suppliers to the posh, which is why I know about it.
Oh, no, I know about it very well. I've got...
Because you're posh.
One of our walls in his house was...
Oh, darling, when I had the interior design around and they recommended Farrow and Ball to me, darling.
Let me tell you, it was Mouse's Back.
Mouse's Back, yes. Yeah.
Well, I kept calling it Mouse's Arse, which really annoyed my girlfriend, Henriette. Yeah.
So there you go. Go and Google it, people. You'll figure it out. JK, always a delight to see you, whether it be a Monday or a Friday. You bookend my week, dear.
Oh, thank you. Terrific show.
Great fun tonight. Yeah.
Really terrific.
Good.
Great. Mark is always superb. I'm telling you to your face here, Mark. You're always great.
Thank you very much, JK. And like I said, hopefully Monday, you know, we'll have a Chelsea victory to talk about. And the first time we've beaten Man City at Wembley since the full Members' Cup final 35 years ago.
Indeed. Well, let's finish on that positive. But people have mixed...
I was there, Chooch.
I know. People of Mixlr, it was always lovely to see you on a Friday as well. Really, really great to have you on board. Look forward to seeing you next Monday as well. And for those of you listening as a podcast later tonight, thank you for listening. See you next week. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, keep it chels.
Up the chels!
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.